Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Bobby Mutt Football Show. I'm your host, Sam Anthony. Joining me again here in the Army Radio Studio is Michael Shuley. And we have a great show for you guys today. Get excited because Robert Morris Football had quite the exciting game this weekend, didn't they, Mike?
They certainly did, and they proved me wrong. And I believe I'm humble enough to say that I was not just a little wrong, but I was very wrong. Last week, I said 56-21 was the score. I had some hot takes in Shuley's shock picks. Peep the article on armucentralmedia.com. Little shameless plug right there.
Hey, why not? We're all about shameless plugs here.
But, yeah, I said the Colonials weren't going to do so hot this week. And, well, they didn't pick up the W. They played, I think... It was entertaining to watch. It was a good game. A lot of positives to take out of this one.
Yeah, and to me, the biggest positive that we need to talk about is the fact that Robert Morris completed an 18-point comeback. They were down 18 points with 10 minutes left in the third quarter. This is 18 points down after both teams scored two touchdowns each to open the second half. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it just looked like, you know, Robert Morris was going to put up the numbers in terms of scoring, but that the defense wasn't going to be able to make the stops in order for the Colonials to climb back into it. All of a sudden, a couple turnovers, two interceptions, one that was a little awkward, bounced off the referee, but then Robert Morris climbs back into it, takes that 46-42 lead, goes away, final score 49-46. But in terms of scoring, that's the most scoring for Robert Morris since they put up 54 against Central Connecticut in 2013. That was back when Joe Walton was head coach. That was two head coaches ago. John Banaszak was unable to produce any of that in his tenure as Colonials head coach. Bernard Clark doing so in game four. So, again, like you said, a lot of positives.
Certainly. One of the things, though, that I don't think we touched upon, though, is the red shirt freshman running back.
Elijah Jackson.
Elijah Jackson kind of coming. You and I had both talked earlier in the earlier in the year about how Stevens is going to be the guy and how we thought Stevens had the potential to have a huge year, the transfer from Bowling Green, correct?
That is correct.
But and he looked decent the first couple of weeks. Nothing too great from the running game, you know. Averaging over 4 yards a carry with Stevens.
It was solid. It was solid play.
And even against even this week, he was solid again. Five carries, 31 yards, a touchdown. 6.2 yards a carry, which is good numbers. But then there's Elijah Jackson. 27 attempts for 109 yards, a long of 20, four-yard average, and two touchdowns. I mean, there's not much more you would want from your running back there, getting 27 touches on the ball there just on the ground alone. Add in two receptions for 27 yards as well. And that's a pretty darn good game there.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, he was the first 100-yard rusher since Cole Blake in 2015 against St. Francis. So it's been, I mean, I was a freshman. I'm a senior now. I was a freshman in college. You were still in high school the last time Robert Morris had a 100-yard rusher. So that's significant in terms of the fact that this kid's a redshirt freshman. So you're talking about a future star here. And again, we've seen flashes because Cole Blake was a freshman when he ran. He got his 100-yard game. But the difference is here is there was a lot more that came with that. Besides just the 100-yard game, it was this offense as a whole. The defense looked good. Jimmy Walker was consistent. He really looked good. He looked like he was confident in that starting role. The offensive line made him comfortable. He's moving around. Stevens looked good. Tons of wide receivers were getting receptions. There were some great receptions from Anthony Delafamine. Vecchio got a little bit of action. Matthew Gonzalez continued to play consistent. He had 50 yards receiving. It was everybody getting in the action, and the offense as a whole looked good. Which in terms of the fact that a team can't just, you know, zone in on Jackson and stop him is huge in having all those guys be able to be successful.
Definitely. And back with the passing game there, Jimmy Walker was 20 of 28 for 238 yards and a touchdown. He was sacked twice on the day, but he had 238 yards. And Anthony Delafamine led the team in receiving with three catches for 55 yards. So what that shows me right there, and you look at this score sheet, Anthony Delafamine, three receptions. Gonzalez, five receptions. Steve Petrick, two receptions. Jackson, two receptions. McGee, 2. Vecchio, 2 receptions. Robinson, 2. Stevens, 2. That is great to see that the distribution and the amount of people, because I do think that this team offensively does have some weapons, and it's the way you use them. I think, for example, Vecchio and even Delfemini, kind of like your SWAT, your slot guys, and then Gonzalez down the scene, or down the seam rather. I think those can be some big play guys for the Colonials.
Well, and look at this too. I mean, in terms of receiving the longest receptions, 23, 22, 27, 20. And those are for your top four receivers. In terms of the fact that, you know, again, they're not super huge explosive plays, but you got multiple guys that are getting downfield 20 plus yards is good, because that means you're spreading the field well. That also means that you don't need the huge, giant explosive plays to score. They were driving well. They were looking consistent. They were controlling the ball. And they bounced back because, again, that opening drive for Robert Morris was they got within the 40-yard line, and Jimmy Walker fumbled the ball. And that was one of those things that typically in the past would be a momentum killer for the rest of the game. You know, Robert Morris feeling like they were going to get off to a good start would never be able to find kind of their bearings. And while they kind of struggled through that first half, they did make some stuff happen. They made enough happen to keep them in that game. That's the important thing here. That's what you're seeing. That's to me, that's the culture shock. That's the difference with this team, is it's a different confidence. To me, when you look at this offense now, especially after this game, you believe that every time they get the ball, they're going to go down the field and score. And that's completely different from teams that you saw in the past that really struggled to get the ball in field goal range. And then having the lack of a field goal kicker, or putting all that pressure on a kicker to make something happen, really made it hard when you got these deficits. Old Robert Morris teams, John Banaszak, Robert Morris football teams, could not have come back from an 18-point deficit. That is what's different about this team, and that's what makes you confident going into the rest of conference play. Granted, it was a loss. Granted, that stinks because, again, NEC play, every win's important. You want to win out in the NEC. But there's this idea that Robert Morris can hang in any game with any team in the NEC.
Well, I completely agree with that. And back to the point you were making about the receivers. While this team offensively doesn't have a home run hitter necessarily, he doesn't have that guy that's going to be able to beat a cornerback on a double move, streak 60 yards down the field, and catch a long touchdown. Well, I don't know if they necessarily have that guy. They could pick up a significant chunk of yards from play to play, and I think they've shown that up to this point. And back to your point where this team's kind of never out of it, there was always something with me watching this game where it's like, all right, it's the first quarter. Bryant kind of has everything going for him here, but it was kind of like almost like a bend but don't break. You know, they never got it. Never in this game were they blown out. 18 points is a significant margin, but when it's 18 points at halftime, that's not too bad. You know, I believe Bryant did get the ball after halftime, but even you take your that's two stops. Really, two stops and two touchdowns, and you're back within one score.
Yep.
So while that's much easier said than done, there was even something watching this team where it's like you can never really say it's done.
Yeah. I mean, again, Robert Morris got the ball to start that second half, and the first thing that happened was Terrence Stevens took it almost all the way down the field to the 1-yard line.
That's right, 97 yards, I believe.
And all of a sudden you're making a statement, and that was huge in terms of momentum for the Colonials.
However, I do believe, though, they only got 3 points out of that. Which, yes, I'm almost positive because I'm sitting there thinking, and
I hate to tell you you're wrong, but you're wrong.
I am wrong?
Yeah, it was a touchdown.
They got a touchdown? All right.
Elijah good. Jackson.
Because I was going to say they need to be converting. That's right. Remembering now. That is correct.
You know, you didn't even watch the second half. What are you doing?
I watched that play because I remember commenting about how the play-by-play guy was not very good at adding enthusiasm. Because I'm sitting there,
out ESPN3.
Well, I'm sitting there with a laptop, like watching that. There's something else on the TV, and I hear, all right, and there goes Stevens down the sideline. You're just like monotone. Then I look down, and the guy has green grass in front of him for as far as the eye can see, and I'm like, holy crap, this guy got all those yards, he's going in for a touchdown almost. And yeah, that was my gripe on the ESPN broadcast there. But
so just officially putting in Mike Shuley's petition to become the official play-by-play for Robert Morris ESPN3 games.
When you're used to Adam Meluso blowing out your eardrums.
I was thinking Chris Shevlin.
Even Chris Shevlin. Shevlin, I think, is a fantastic
Shevlin
guy.
Can call a game.
He can call
Let's
a game.
Let's talk about
he
the fact that Chris Shevlin's fantastic, and I wish he would narrate my life. Like, but, I wish I could do a good Shevlin impression.
Now, being wrong about what I was originally saying about how they only got a field goal.
All right, back to the topic.
That's better that they take that opportunity and they get 7 points out of it, because it's one of those things, and I'm going to kind of transition this to turnovers, where you have to get points on your opportunities. And I think one of the things that bit them early was that early fumble and then Bryant taking it down the field and scoring, and the turnover ratio of this team just not being that good. And I think it could possibly be something that's a little bit cause for concern at this point.
Yeah, because, again, looking at this, Robert Morris, no interceptions, which was phenomenal. Great job. The fact that, you know, we're confident that Robert Morris is confident enough through the air to not make mistakes.
If I can recall correctly, that's the first game of the season without an interception.
I believe you're correct.
That is correct, because they threw, I think, 3 against James Madison, two or three. I think Walker had 2, Barr had 1, or not Barr, Lewis had 1 against Virginia State, and then they threw...
Martin had 1, too, against James Madison.
Yes, and then they had another 1 or 2 against Dayton.
Yeah. So, but the turnovers in this case against Bryant were on the ground, the fumbles. 2 fumbles from Jimmy Walker, so that, again, is the issue of Jimmy Walker under pressure, making sure that the ball security is there. But I promise you that after this week, that's something that Clark is working on in practice. If that's not a focus of the upcoming bye week, to, because in terms of the fact that Robert Morris can sit there and these are the little things they can focus on, ball security, and ball security is not a little thing, but in terms of the fact that, like, Jimmy Walker played nearly a perfect game besides the fact that when he got under pressure, he would cough the ball up. Because, again, he got sacked twice, and I believe both sacks turned into fumbles. If I can be correct there, because there were only 2 sacks, so it would make sense that the 2 sacks were fumbles.
Unless he was out in the field running.
Which he wasn't for, like, either of those fumbles.
So, yeah, I didn't, like you said, I didn't see the whole game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even the 2 sacks, I mean, sacks are going to happen. I'm not too concerned about the sack number, but definitely ball security is one of those things here. And I have the turnover margin in front of me, and their total margin right now is not looking good. They're dead last in the conference in that category. They average 2.25 turnovers a game for an overall turnover margin of -9. And while they were able to get the ball off of Bryant this game with the 2 interceptions, they're one of them, of course, aided by the ref in a kind of a freak play. Bryant also put the ball on the ground 3 times. Luckily for the Bulldogs, it bounced right back to them, and they were able to recover those, but that's one of the things with football where sometimes you get the bounces, sometimes you don't. It's how you overcome them.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be something that you can't control. So, that in terms of, like, that aspect of the game, that's hard. What Robert Morris can do from their end is prevent those things from happening. Because, again, you're talking about Jimmy Walker doesn't fumble that ball when the Colonials are down 49-46 with 6 minutes left. We're talking potentially Robert Morris going down, driving, and scoring.
I believe it was something more like 3 minutes, maybe?
It was 6 minutes.
It was 6?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
no, you're right. It was like 3. No, yeah, you're correct. Yeah. But again, with little time
and timeouts,
left.
They had timeouts. That's not even...
Well, they were 1 play away from getting the ball back. But again, they put themselves in that situation because of a turnover on the 2nd play of that drive.
Mm-hmm. The strip sack came in, and not only does that strip sack right there at the beginning of the drive, not only does that, in that scenario, put them in, all right, now we need to make a stop and we're going to be lucky to get the ball back with just under 2 minutes left and no timeouts. In a different scenario, that strip sack happens on your own 20-yard line. A team with a capable kicker, which Bryant did not have, they're already in field goal range. That's already points for them.
They put it up 6. There's a minute left and you go down and score a touchdown now. Whereas if Robert Morris had made that stop, all they needed to do was get down and at least get a field goal tied up. That's a different 2-minute drill than you're running when you're down by 6. That's a big thing in terms of the fact that Robert Morris, again, had 1 more play gone their way, had that wide receiver gotten tackled 1 yard back because he got exactly 12 yards. You're talking about Robert Morris with the ball, with a chance, plenty of time to go down. In college, the clock stops once you get that first down. They were moving the ball well consistently the entire game. You're talking about a different scenario. So the one thing I want to take a look at, Mike Shuley, is the fact that for the fourth straight game, it appears that this defense has really struggled. Because, again, even in the one game where they didn't allow a lot of scoring against Virginia State, there was still a lot of yardage. And the reason there wasn't more scoring was because of the fact that Virginia State didn't have a field goal kicker that was consistent enough to make kicks.
Bryant didn't have that as well.
Exactly. And Bryant still put up 49 points on Robert Morris. You're talking 73 from James Madison, another 49 from Dayton as well. This is a team that allows an average of 47 points per game, which is by far the worst in the conference. And again, you still take out that James Madison game, they're still allowing around 40 points per game. Are we at the point now where we need to be seriously concerned about this defense ever finding its way?
I think we do. And this week especially, because this was kind of the first test through the air that they've really had. Yes, last week DiNucci threw for like 184 yards and I believe three touchdowns, but James Madison did most of their damage on the ground, and a lot of these teams have been up by such a margin where they're just kind of running out the clock and taking their time from that aspect. And Virginia State, of course, a very run-dominant team. But there's something about this defense where, although it's saying here Robert Morris did have more first downs on the afternoon than the Bulldogs with 27, Bryant still had 25 first downs. And one of the things that I kind of noticed with this team was it was third down and short or even fourth down, and they just, like, they couldn't get off the field when they needed to. They never had that big stop. They never put their foot down and really were able to get the ball back for the Colonials.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing to look at here, all right, is how important defense is, especially in the NEC. So, number one team in the conference right now is Sacred Heart. Sacred Heart is 3-0, won their first conference game against Wagner. And Sacred Heart, by far, has the best defense in the NEC. They're ranked first in rushing defense, allowing 112 yards per game, and they're first in passing defense, allowing just 128 yards passing per game. They're consistent, and the reason they've been successful is because their defense keeps them in games, and they don't have to expect, again, 46 points from their offense in every game. That is huge. And again, Robert Morris, sixth in pass defense, 253.2 yards per game. Rushing defense, worst, 272 yards per game, which is almost 90 yards worse than any other team in the NEC. They're almost letting up 300 rushing yards per game. They've had 15 rushing touchdowns allowed, whereas, like, Sacred Heart, again, best rushing defense, has allowed just 2 rushing touchdowns. That's, I mean, the differences are staggering. And Robert Morris, again, has really struggled to get to the quarterback, win the battles of the defensive line, to make those big stops. Again, that fourth down at the very end of the game, making those stops is important. One of Robert Morris's 2 turnovers was a bounce off the referee. It was a weird play.
Yeah, and you're not going to get those plays all the time. And here is the statistic that I have been looking for. Opponent third down conversion rate.
Yep.
Robert Morris dead last in the conference. They're 21 of 47. 44.7% is the conversion rate by their opponents on third down. Then you go to fourth down, and they're still tied for last. Opponents against them on fourth down are 6 of 8, 75%. And I think that just proves it right there, that my point of, I didn't even know that statistic, like, they kept track of that statistic in the NEC. I don't know why. But the visual thing of just seeing that this team just kind of can't make that stop. And the statistic that I'm really looking for now and I'm searching for is, how many plays over 20 yards has this team allowed? Because it seems like they get burned on home runs all the time.
Well, yeah.
And that's definitely one of the things that need to be cracked down on.
Yeah, I mean, look at this Bryant game. So it starts off pretty modest, but then you have a 29-yard touchdown to make it 21-3. You have a 60-yard pass to make it 42-24, and then you have a 26-yard run at the very end of the game. These big plays for big chunks of yards are what is killing Robert Morris, because you get to that third down or you get to that fourth down, and then all of a sudden, bang, you know, 26-yard play, and all that work you did to just stop it doesn't matter. And we're talking about the yardage they let up, you know, 525 yards per game total, almost 300 yards rushing allowed per game. That all gets lower if you just make the stops on third down. That's the thing. That is, I mean, and yeah, that sounds easy when I'm sitting here talking about it, right? But that's what it is, where the great plays you make on first and second down don't matter if you can't make the stop on third.
Well, even on first and second down, this team I feel has a very, they're very soft against the run, and the statistics back that up. When it's first down and you can get 4 or 5 yards a carry, and then on second down they run it again and maybe only get 2 yards, those third and shorts, fourth and shorts, I mean, that's
killer.
That, you know, yeah, because those obviously less yardage. Doesn't take a genius to figure out that it's going to have a higher rate of conversion.
I will say on the plus side of things, I just noticed this and wanted to point this out. Robert Morris, it plays the cleanest game in the NEC. They have the fewest penalty yards per game, only 44.5, compared to the most, which is Wagner, which is 71.5. So in terms of that, at least they're not killing themselves in terms of penalties. I know I just completely changed the topic.
But no, but that's one of those things, though, where it's back to a discipline thing. And, like, that's – actually, I'm going to tip my hat to the offensive line on this one. Here's why. So they haven't given up many sacks this season. I think you said, what, coming into this game, five? Or after this game, five?
After this game, five.
After this game, five, and they gave up 2 in this game. That also means there's not a whole lot of holding calls on that offensive line either, which those are, you want to talk about a drive killer?
Yeah.
A holding call will kill your drive.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I think that the O-line, especially because you got a guy like Eric McAllister at center, who not only is a great offensive lineman, but he's a good leader. I mean, those guys really respond to him. Him and Walker have a really great relationship. I think that's huge in all these things. And with that, I do want to take a look, while we still have time left, at this upcoming matchup. Now, Robert Morris has the bye week coming up, but when they come back, it's homecoming against CCSU. So we've talked about all these things. The defense struggling, the offense being successful, the O-line playing impressively, the lack of being able to make stops on third down. Now, looking at CCSU, their scoring's okay. They're fourth in the NEC, 27.2 points per game, not as good as Bryant was. Their defense, on the other hand, they allow 24 points per game, which is second in the NEC. Defense is better. They only allow 196.5 passing yards, second in the NEC. They've only allowed 5 sacks, which is the fewest in the NEC. And their biggest thing, which is interesting that you brought up, Robert Morris's lack of being able to stop teams on third down, because CCSU is the second worst team in the NEC on third downs. They only convert 28%. So would you say, Mike Shuley, that that's going to be the biggest thing in terms of watching this CCSU game, is Robert Morris making the stops on third down?
Definitely. It's going to have to be up to the defense, because CCSU, you were just reading off the stats right there, they have a formidable defense. The thing with Bryant is their defense wasn't very good coming into this game. It was rated near the bottom of the pack, just like Robert Morris's. And if their offense is, they're mediocre in terms of NEC play, they're right in the middle of the pack. The third down battles are going to have to be crucial, because if you can get off the field and you can keep that bright, because I have a feeling that this game could be a low scoring game. I don't think it'll be interesting to see if the Robert Morris offense can sustain the offensive firepower 2 weeks in a row, as I blow out the mic there. But yeah, I don't know if RMU will be able to contain or sustain the same type of offensive production. I think they're going to see a drop-off there. But it'll be interesting to see if this RMU team can hold CCSU down to, let's say, under 30 points, under 24 points. Maybe have one of those games where CCSU puts up, they allow 24 points. They're scoring on average right now 27 points a game. So I'm thinking, right around there, as I'm calculating my final score prediction right now, I think they have to keep them under 28 points.
See, I agree with that in terms of the fact that I think that it's hard to match 46 points every game. I think that that's so much to ask in itself. I'm pretty confident in this RMU offense, not just because of this one game, but because of how they did it in just this one game, which was the consistency from all the players. Elijah Jackson, Terrence Stevens, Jimmy Walker, Delafamine, Vecchio, Gonzalez, Petrick, Robinson, all these different players getting a hold of the football, plus an offensive line that is right now looking like the best offensive line in the NEC, and I'm not afraid to say that, and I'm confident to say that they are the best offensive line in the NEC. You continue with that, I think it keeps him in the game. I think that you need to. I think you should want to. I think that it's important that they keep them below 28. I don't think they need to. I think that's the important thing. I think that for Robert Morris's sake, for making the job easier, they need to. But I think that Robert Morris can put up those points, despite the fact that CCSU's defense is good. It's one of the best in the NEC. I think that the consistency makes it so that Robert Morris can continue to put a lot of points on the board.
See, I'm not so sure if I want to buy into their offense is going to be able to overpower the CCSU defense. I think the offense is good. It's better than where it was last year, especially, but I'm not so sure if I want to put faith in my offense, in this offense being able to beat teams in a shootout quite yet. So that's where I kind of stand on that. I still think everything has to start with the defense. The defense has to hold the opponent. This team shouldn't need to have to score 30 points a game in order to win.
But I think they can. I'm very confident that this team can. Because, 28 points against Dayton, 22 against Virginia State, 46 against Bryant. And with that being said, those are their three, you know, most representative opponents of the NEC. I think that in terms of the fact that against those opponents, they've put up 30 points per game. I think they can continue to see that production because of the ability of those players. And I think they're probably going to have to because of the way this defense has been playing. I think you're going to see a lot of high-scoring games this year, which is interesting because it's been very different from tradition. But, yeah, I mean, you look at who Central Connecticut's played, and one of their games was against Lincoln, Pennsylvania, a D2 school. Granted, one was also against Ball State, but they have yet to play a conference game, so I think that reflective of CCSU's defense and their ability, I don't think that we can quite tell that yet.
I mean, that's true, but I think it'll be interesting to see, certainly. I do think this is going to be a close game. It'll make for a good homecoming broadcast, and I'm fairly excited to see what happens, because I think this, not trying to slack off Bryant or anything, but if this, it kind of reminds me, it's a little bit reminiscent of, do you remember the hockey team's defense at the beginning of last year, how they were kind of like up and down?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the season, the defense stood up and the offense kind of like went away. And then once the playoffs clicked, everything was working. They were able to make that run to the championship. I'm thinking for this game against Central Connecticut State, if they can start piecing together this defense, then they might be able to go on a run here.
So final score prediction.
I don't think they're going to be there quite yet. I'm going to say 35-28 CCSU.
I'm going to say 35, but I'm going to say 35 for Robert Morris. I'm going to say 17 for Central Connecticut. I'm going to say that defense finds a little bit of answer, makes some timely stops, a couple turnovers, mistakes by Central Connecticut. Bernard Clark gets his first NEC win.
All right. It'll be interesting to see. Enjoy the bye week, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Bobby Mo Football Show. And catch us soon. We're becoming a web show.
We are becoming a web show.
So you're going to be able to see me and Mike Shuley's beautiful faces once a week on TV. So again, thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll see you next week.